Morning, Rabbi. I would like to welcome everyone to the shiur. Those who are here for the weekend, I'd like to welcome you to our Sunday morning shiur. The topic of today's discussion is based on something that's in yesterday's parasha. We read in the parasha Sota, in the discussion of the procedure of what goes on with the woman who is suspected of adultery. So the Torah says that a Megillas Sota, a certain formulation from the Torah, is written down on parchment and it is put in water. And as such, the writing on the parchment is erased into the water, and that includes the Shem Hashem. That means that among the things that are erased are the name of Hashem. And this is allowed, the Gemara says, well-known Maimar Chazal, that in the interest of creating Shalom between a husband and a wife, so God was willing to forego even on his honor, and therefore one is allowed to be mochik, the Shem Hashem, for this purpose. But this brings us to the general question of Shemus in general, which is a very big question in the halacha. It is actually probably more of a serious question than we take it. And also in our times in particular, there have been many new shilas that have come up. First of all, the proliferation of newspapers, the Torah that contains some sort of Divrei Torah that we have today. There are many. One could go into any Judaica store before Shabbos and you see that there are all kinds of papers, and they all basically have some sort of at least one or two halacha pages. So the question comes up, what does one do with those newspapers? What does one do with those pages? We also have the questions today of tapes. This is already for quite some time. The outdated cassette tapes was a shiloh for many years. But today we have with CDs. We have also with computer screens where you can have Divrei Torah. We know there's a tremendous amount of Divrei Torah that is available online. And whether or not a person should go on the internet is a question that I'm not going to get involved with. But the fact of the matter is that there's a lot there. And the question comes up, if you have something on your screen, can you delete it? Can a person receives an email with Divrei Torah on it? So what would be the status of that? Many such questions come up. I hope to get to all of these, and as well to the question of whether one can take a newspaper which has Divrei Torah into the bathroom, which is probably the biggest question by many of us, that pertains today. Okay, so I'd like to, in order to start, I'd like to present a little bit the topic in general of Shemus, where it comes from, and what the nature of the Isser is. So if you look at the sheets that we handed out, the Torah tells us in the beginning of Parshas Re'eh, which is coming up in the summer, so the Torah tells us that Moshe instructed the Klal Yisrael that when they go into Eretz Yisrael, so we have here in Pasuk Beis, Abed to Abdunas Kol HaMakomos Asher Avdu Sham HaGoyim, that you should obliterate all of the places where the Goyim worshipped, Asher Atem Yarshem Osam Es Eloheim, all the places of worship, all the Avodah Zorah. And the pasuk proceeds to say the different places where they could be located, the different places of worship. And the pasuk continues and says, pasuk gimel, v'nitatzem es mizbechosam, that you should destroy their altars, v'shibartem es matzevosam, all kinds of asherem tishrufun ve'esh, all the items that were involved in worship should be destroyed and burnt. Psile Elohim tekadeon, the images, the idols of their gods should be destroyed. And basically, you should cause the name of these Avodah Zarahs to be totally removed, to be totally lost from those places. The next pasuk says, Lo sasun kein l'Hashem Elokeichem. However, you should not do this to Hashem your God. You should not do this to Hashem your God. So what does this mean? So if you look down below, the Gemara Maseches Makis tells us that the Gemara there is discussing, if anyone is familiar with Makkos, they're talking about a situation how a person could do a single act or, in a very short period of time incur the punishment of Makkos many different times. So in the course of the discussion, the Gemara talks about a person who is who is a mochek, es Hashem b'ha'ichasu, a person who's plowing a field, and while he's doing so, he happens to erase the name of Hashem somehow. So if you go down to the Gemara here, five lines down in the text, the Gemara says, "Va'az harase mehocha." The prohibition of being mochek shem Hashem, the prohibition of erasing the name of Hashem, is from this following pasuk: "Vibadetem es shmam min hamakom mahu," and then "Losasun kein laHashem Elokeichem." In other words, by the fact we have the juxtaposition, the two psukim, that at the end of pasuk gimel above, the Torah says, "Vibadetem es shmam," that you should cause their names to be lost, to be wiped away from that place, and then the very next pasuk says, "Don't do that to Hashem." So the Gemara interprets this to mean that you should not cause the name of Hashem to be erased. You should not cause the name of Hashem to be wiped out in any manner. And thus, we have a prohibition in the Torah, in Isser Min HaTorah, for a person to erase the name of Hashem. Now, what names of Hashem does this refer to? After all, we know that there are many, there are names of Hashem, there are references. For example, we just now in the Shemoneh Esrei refer to Hashem as not just Elokeinu, Elokei Avoseinu, but we also say Hakel, Hagodol, Hagibor, Vahanora, right? Other places the Torah refers to God as Rachum, Vachanun. So which of these designations are the Shem Hashem? So there is the Gemara Masechus Shvus and Daf Lamed Hey, which is not on the sheet, but the Gemara basically says that there are several names that fall into this category. The most famous of which is the what's called by us the Shem Havaya, the name of Yud K Vav K, which we don't even spell out verbally. We don't even speak it out. Hoges Hashem Bos Yosef. A person should not even say it out that way. So therefore, we switch the Hey. We say K. Okay, but the fact is that that would be one. Also, the name of Hashem, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, the name with that Aleph Lamed Kale or Elokah or Elokim, the name Shakai Shin Dalet Yud, which appears on the mezuzahs, on the writing of the on the mezuzahs, and the name Tzivakos Sadi Beis Aleph Vav Sof. Those names are all names of, that the Gemara says a person who was to erase any of those names would be violating this pasuk that the Torah says Lo Sasum Kein LaHashem Elokeichem. Okay, what about the other the references that we mentioned, Godol, Gibor, Vanora? So that does not apply to any of those things, but it does apply to these names, and therefore a person has to be particularly careful with these names. And of course, you will notice that on this very sheet that we handed out, we have the name of Hashem printed Yud Kei Vav Kei. This is photocopied from a Chumash, and therefore the question will have to be addressed: what does one do with these sheets at the end of the year? So, but the fact of the matter is that this is a question. This is these names fall into the category of the Shem Hashem. Now, a question which comes up certainly by us living here in America or other countries of the Golos is what happens if you have the name of Hashem translated into English, if it's written in a foreign language. So this is a machlokus amongst the poskim, whether that does constitute something or not. Many people are machmir. There is a shach somewhere that is lenient, but many disagree with his opinion. And therefore, the saying G-O-D would be also the equivalent, in other words, that is the equivalent of the reference of Hashem, would also be questionable whether a person, by these names that I just mentioned, there is no question. It's clear that anyone erasing any of these names would be violating the Isser in the Torah. If it's in English, it seems from many poskim that a person should be machmir also, because there are many who say that if it's written that way in English, certainly if any of the names of Hashem are literally if they're transliterated into English, that I think is even more of a consensus that says that a person would have to be strict with that. What a person does with money that says "In God We Trust," we will discuss later on. Okay, but the fact of the matter is that these are all questions. If any of the names of Hashem cannot be erased. Okay, now, the question that comes up by us would be, well, what about, so the Isser in the Torah, the Isser d'oraisa of Shemus, applies to the name of Hashem. Okay, so thus, if a person were to take a chumash and burn it, or throw it out, rip it up, or whatever, or erase it, pour ink over it in such a way that it would cover over, erase the name, so that would be a violation of the Isser in the Torah. Now, the question that comes up is, but most of the Shemus that we have does not fit into this. For example, it's quite possible that in an entire Masechta of Gemara, one will not find the Shem Hashem. It's possible, right? Or in certain books of the Ksuvim, you don't find the name of Hashem. Most notably, we all know in the Megillas Esther, we don't find the name of Hashem appearing. And thus the question would be, well, if the whole Isser of Shemus is, and by the way, the reason why it's called Shemus is because Shemos means the names of God. That's obviously where the title comes from. So you'll say, well, if that is the prohibition, then if there are no Shemos, then I don't have to do anything. Then it should be no problem. I could take an old Megillas Esther and toss it out if I want. So the truth of the matter is that this is not so, and the basis for this is found if you turn on the sheet to the side B, the source number 3 here. The source for this is a Mishnah and a Gemara that we find in the beginning of the 16th parak of Masechta Shabbos. Just the background for this halacha is that we know that on Shabbos there is a halacha that is a very difficult halacha for a person to follow and to accept, but nonetheless it's halacha that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, and that is that the rabbis were very concerned, the rabbanon were concerned that if there is a fire, chas v'shalom, there is a fire in a place, obviously if a fire endangers anyone's life, there's no question that you could put the fire out even on Shabbos. In other words, putting out a fire involves a malacha of kippa, of mechabi, you're extinguishing a fire. However, if it involves a threat to somebody's life, so clearly you could put out the fire yourself, there's no question. But what happens in a situation where everybody can evacuate, or you know, everyone's out of the house, and they notice, oh my gosh, the house caught on fire, and a person says, I want to go in and save what I have. There's an Erev in the community. I'll go into the house, and by the time the fire department gets here, who knows what's going to happen. I'm going to go into the house and pull out all my belongings. So the Rabbanon made a prohibition against doing so out of the concern that it will cause a person, that because a person, once he gets involved in the act of trying to save his money, it's very likely that he'll get into a situation where he realizes that he cannot save all of it, and that time he will say, you know what, I'll just take a hose and put out the fire, and that'll be the end of it. And that would be violating one of the malachas of Shabbos, and therefore we have a halacha that generally speaking, if it does not involve a danger to life, if the house has been evacuated, you really can't save any of the items in the house on Shabbos. This is a halacha that's brought. It's very difficult for a person in that situation to accept, but nevertheless, this is the halacha. But there are certain exceptions that were made to this, and one of them is the topic of this Mishnah, which says, "Kol kisvei hakodesh matzilin osam ipnei adleika," that if there is a fire, a person is allowed to rescue kisvei hakodesh. He's allowed to rescue the holy books, because if he allows the fire to rage with the books inside, so it's going to involve the desecration of the svarim. The svarim are going to burn. So the Mishnah says, Bein shekoren behen, bein she'ein koren behen. This applies to svarim, whether one is allowed to read them or not, which is a discussion in the Gemara, what exactly that means. We find in the Gemara says a very interesting thing, that in the times of the Mishnah, and particularly in the time of the Mishnah, there was a prohibition from reading the Ksuvim on Shabbos. A person could not read the Megillas Esther or Koheles or any of the other books of Ezra and Nehemiah, the books of the Ksuvim, because of the fact, no, it's the Torah and the Nevi'im, you could, obviously. The Chumash, we read in Shul. And the Haftarah also, which comes from the Nevi'im, we read in Shul. But the Ksuvim, there was a time that they banned the reading of Ksuvim on Shabbos, interestingly enough, Why? Because mitnei bittul beis hamedrash, the Gemara says, because it used to be that in the times of the Mishnah, the rabbis gave shiurim on Shabbos, shiurim and halacha. It was the only time they could gather people together to learn, because during the week everybody was busy with the parnasa, so really the main time of learning was Shabbos. And there was a concern that the books of the Ksuvim are so fascinating to read that a person will get caught up in reading the Ksuvim and he's not going to come and hear the shiur in halacha, which is probably, in the context of Shabbos, more important, because he needs to know what he can, he or she needs to know what they could do on Shabbos. So therefore they have to come to attend the shiur, and therefore the rabbis banned for a period of time the reading of Ksuvim. This does not apply by us today. We clearly, halavai, people should spend Shabbos reading the Ksuvim as opposed to Newsweek or Time or the Wall Street Journal. But the fact of the matter is, or anything less than that, but Miami Herald. But the fact of the matter is that this is what the Mishnah means. Even books that you can't read on Shabbos, nevertheless, you could save. And then the Mishnah says the following. The Mishnah says, the way the Gemara interprets the Mishnah, that even svarim that are written, that have been translated into other languages, is a question the Gemara Maseches Megillah discusses. Originally, there's an opinion in the Gemara that the rabbis were opposed to translating the Torah into other languages for certain reasons. But nevertheless, no matter what it is, if it is a sefer written in any language, tu'unim geniza, it requires geniza. Now, what is geniza? Geniza means that the books be put away in a location that they will not be disturbed and not come to any sort of desecration. Right? You may recall, you see some of the old shuls, I mean, and truthfully, we should have it today as well, but certainly, you know, the older shuls in different cities, you go in Eretz Yisrael, and then in America, New York, you see here probably also, that there were rooms, that there was always like that back room in the shul, or sometimes the attic, that was a room that if you ever walked in there, you would just see boxes of old svarim, and what was the purpose of these boxes? It was because that's geniza. Geniza means that a sefer that is outdated, meaning not that the contents are outdated, but the use of it is outdated. So you're supposed to put it in a place that it shouldn't come to be zoyin. We know that they had the very famous Cairo Geniza. You go in the museums in Eretz Yisrael, that they found quite a bit in some shul in Egypt, right? There was the famous Cairo Geniza, that there was there had been a lot of old svarim that were accumulated there, and they found, and they were looking to check the authenticity of certain, exactly how certain words were spelt in the Tanakh and different things, the different issues that came up that they got from the Geniza. So the Mishnah here is telling us that svarim that have to be put, first of all, one should try obviously to save them from a fire, but also they should not be just tossed away, but tu'unim geniza, they need to be put away in a respectful manner. If one looks at the Tosfos, so now we have to bear in mind that in the time that we had the Mishnah, right, and in the early period of the Tanoim, the pre Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi world, so the only svarim that they had, that what could be written down, the Torah Shebaal Peh could not be written down, so one could not write Gemaras, Mishnayas, Perushim, right? You walk into the Yeshiva's Beis Medrash, you see thousands and thousands of Svarim, but if we went back in time to the era of the second Beis HaMikdash, you would never have seen almost any of those Svarim in a Beis Medrash, because the most you would have seen would have been the Torah Shebichtav. That was the only thing that was allowed to be written down, as we once discussed previously. So therefore, in the time of the Mishnah, pretty much up to the days of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the halacha was that the svarim meant only the books of Tanakh. But if you look here at the Tosfos on the second Tosfos on the left hand side of the page, the second Tosfos from the top, the third line down in that Tosfos, the Ramaschal Aliba, so Tosfos says, "V'hashta svarim shelanu matzilim." So Tosfos says that as far as the halacha of saving svarim from the fire on Shabbos, meaning that the svarim should not come to desecration, says Tosfos that the svarim shalanu, the svarim that we have, meaning even the Gemaras, the Mishnayos, the Midrashim, all these types of things, and Perushim, and so forth, the matzilim, the halacha is that we save them on Shabbos as well, the nitnu likros bahen, that we are allowed to have them, these svarim are allowed you're allowed to make such svarim, mishum eis lasos lashem heferu tarasecha, we discussed this a while back, because of the famous psak that in the case of great need one could go against, even though writing down the Torah Shebal Peh is an Issa D'Oraisa, as we discussed several months ago, but nevertheless, in a case of great need, when the Torah was being forgotten, so they made a heter that you could write down the Torah Shebal Peh, and thus the halacha that applies to the sanctity of Svarim, saving it from a fire or acquiring Geniza, applies to the Svarim that we have as well. Which means, and the way this is the view of several Rishonim, and the way it's brought in the Sefer HaChinuch when he discusses the mitzvah of not erasing the name of Hashem, is that the prohibition applies even if the name of Hashem does not appear in the Sefer. Even if you have, let's say, the Megillah Esther, or a Gemara, or a Mishnah, whatever it may be, but as long as it's Divrei Torah that are allowed to be written down, have the status of Kedusha, and as such, one would have to treat them respectfully. Whether or not erasing such a Sefer is a violation of a Torah law is a discussion, that's a dispute. There are those who point to the opinion of a Rambam somewhere, it's very questionable. Some cite the Rambam, that the Rambam holds this in Issa D'Oraisa. If one looks carefully into the Rambam that's quoted, it's highly debatable whether that's what the Rambam was saying. But at the very least, it would be in Issa D'Rabbanan that one would be prohibited from taking Svarim even without the name of Hashem and throwing them out or putting them into some sort of disgrace or erasing them. So thus, we have the din of Seamus that applies, that again, Seamus in our time is really a misnomer, because when you say, I'm going to take an old Gemara and put it in Seamus, so that's really a funny thing to say, because Seamus means that I'm going to put it in the place that's reserved for the names of God. Now, it happens to be that in that Gemara there may not be any Seamus. Or the Megillah Esther. I'm going to take this old, you know, sometimes you go nowadays to a simcha that takes place Purim time, so, you know, it's not good enough anymore to give a bencher for the occasion. So sometimes people will give, a Megillah Esther in honor of the season. So you accumulate over the years, you accumulate a lot of these things, and what am I going to do with them? So you say, I'm going to go put in Seamus. Okay, there are no Seamus in the Megillah Esther. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter, because the term Seamus is a broad term, which is a little bit lav dafka. It doesn't have to be specifically Seamus, but anything that has Divrei Torah in it has to be put away in a respectful manner. This psak, if you turn over the page to source number 4, this can be found in the Mishnah Berurah as well, where the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Nun Daled and Aruch Chaim says that a Sefer Torah Shebola, a Sefer Torah that gets worn out, so manichin also b'kli cheres. So a Sefer Torah has to be given extra care. It's put in an earthen vessel that would preserve it to the best possible way. V'gomzin also b'kever Talmud Chacham, and it gets buried. It's supposed to be buried by in the grave of a Talmud Chacham. Afiu elein oshona halachas, even a minor Talmud Chacham, so to speak. But nevertheless, it should be buried together with a person who showed respect. Particular respect for the Torah. So if one looks in the Mishnah Berurah here below in Zifkat and Chaf Dalet, so the Mishnah Berurah says, "V'hu adin shar svarim shebolu shesarach l'gonzam," that other svarim that got worn out also require geniza, v'asur l'sarfam, and it is prohibited to burn them. Afagach the kavanazu shleyavoli debizayim. Even if the person said that I'm concerned that, you know, sometimes it's hard to put things in Seamus. So a person says, you know, if I leave it lying around, you know, to put in Seamus, I may not ever get around to it. So I have an idea. I'm going to burn it. I'll burn it. Now that sounds odd, but the fact is that it's discussed in the poskim that in certain situations that may not be so bad, because it would be better to burn it than to have it lying around and have people step on it. That would be the absolute worst thing. So therefore, one might say that maybe I should get rid of it in some way that it won't come to even a greater bezayin. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Berurah says that by the svarim shelanu, the our svarim today have to be put into Geniza. Yes.
What does a printer do with a bunch of waste?
Oh, we're going to get to that very soon. Okay, so now, so that's as far as the svarim of the post-Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi world that we have today, many, many svarim, because the Torah Shebaal Peh was allowed to be written down, and so forth. So, the question now comes up on a few levels. The question is that what about svarim? The Shaila was raised several hundred years ago, after the advent of the printing press, that what about svarim that are mass-produced, what about the Vritara that are mass-produced on a printing press, do they have the status of Kedusha also? So one might argue that it has to be written, has to be handwritten, in order for the Sifrei Torah, Svarim, the books of Tanakh, and originally were written like you have on a klaf, and so forth. But what about Svarim that are in the printing press? So the fact of the matter is that the consensus of the poskim, there are those who were lenient and said that a printing press is different, it's not considered shamos, but nevertheless the consensus of the poskim is that Svarim that are printed, also, even with the new technology of those days, that they have an ability to mass-produce svarim, nevertheless, they also have the status of Seamus. That seems to be the consensus of the poskim. All right, so that's the background. So now we come to the issues. The issues, obviously, are, so what do we do? What do we do in our times with the various types of Seamus that we have? So the first question, I guess the most common, and there are many, many questions, right? You have Rebbeim, as I mentioned before, you have the newspapers, but aside from newspapers, you also have, it's very common today, that Rebbeim teaching in school or in girls' schools, the moros who teach, print up Divrei Torah and photocopy them. And they hand out to the kids in the class. You don't have to anymore just listen to the teacher read it from the book. Each child, each student could have their very own, right, their very own sheet right in front of their eyes. The photocopied sheets became in schools a very, very big issue. Because if you have a typical elementary school that has whatever amount of grades, 6, 8 grades, so, and you have several classes, you could accumulate in a week's time hundreds and hundreds of sheets of Divrei Torah, and what are you supposed to do with them? And so too comes the question in our time with the internet Torah, and then there are, you know, people I've seen in shuls even where they downloaded, someone did a service and downloaded all the Divrei Torah for the parasha of the week that were found online and made a booklet out of it. It could be sometimes 10, 15 pages, and made numerous copies so that the people in the shul should be able to peruse this. Really, they should take it home and read it, not read it during davening, but the fact is that whenever they read it, that it's provided. So the question is, what do you do with these sheets? What do you do with them? And of course, the biggest question would be, what do we do with the newspapers? Today, virtually all the, you know, starting from as far back as I can go, the Jewish press always had some sort of halacha corner in it, the halacha page, halacha column, and today we have the Hamodia, Ted Neman, or other such papers which have pages of halacha, and they have whole sections with Divrei Torah in them, and a special section comes out before Yontif. You have the magazines, Mishpacha magazine, Bina magazine. I don't want to leave anything out, so I'm not. I generally don't have time to read any of the aforementioned, but the fact is that any such magazine that comes out. So what do you do with it? So the truth of the matter is that this is an old shaila with newspapers. I mean, old because newspapers have been around for already quite some time. And we find in the Achronim, even in the 1800s, that people were saying that it's absolutely wrong to put Divrei Torah in newspapers. that because of the fact that it's going to come to Bezayin, it's going to come, not only will the paper be discarded, but very often, you know, they use the paper for other purposes. Afterwards, the person wants to polish his shoes, right? So you don't want it to get on your nice carpet or on the tiles or whatever it is. So what do? Typically, you take out some newspapers and you put it down and you put the shoes and polish the shoes or wrap the fish or whatever else it may be, right, in the newspapers. So now the question is going to be, you're taking Divrei Torah and you're using it for Bezayin. So because of this, there were many who said that it should not be done, and there are still those who say that it shouldn't be done. And say, even though you'll say, but what do you mean? But this is how people get to learn Torah, and it is very helpful. I myself have, over the years, you know, sometimes I clip things out, and I have a file in my house of articles, Divrei Torah, that I found that I think are worthwhile. Some of these shiurim are based on some of these articles that I found, including this one, right? So the fact is, so they have value. They have value, but on the other hand, you know, to a large extent, what's going to be with them? What's going to be with them? So here, there is a whole range of opinions. Okay, and it's hard to say what to do for sure, but we definitely can say that there's room to be lenient. There's also room to be strict. Okay, there are those who say that newspapers, the Divrei Torah newspapers, have the same status as Sfarim, even though they are on the printing press, but we already decided that printing presses are the same, so that would not be a heter. And since they were written for the purpose of people learning, that's what they put it there for, right? In other words, if it was just mentioned in the course of an article, in other words, you had, for example, someone showed me a number of weeks ago that in the Wall Street Journal on the front page they had an article about Hagba, they had an article about the custom of doing Hagba with the Sefer Torah. This was about a month or so ago, if you want to check it out, that I saw with my own eyes, that there was some article about that. So it was written, and maybe the person was Jewish, but I don't think it was written by any Rosh Yeshiva, right? So therefore, it was probably had some mention of halacha, but that mention of halacha is just in the course of discussion. So that type of thing has no sanctity, because that wasn't written for the purpose of teaching anybody anything. That, I mean, they're just informing you. They're trying to tell you. You know, in some synagogues, or in many synagogues, they have this ritual that they lift up the Torah, a very fascinating thing, and, you know, it becomes sometimes a contest of who could open up the Torah the most. You know, to get the Olympic event of the Hagba, you know, who gets the gold medal. So the fact of the matter is that type of article has no sanctity. But if you have a halacha column written in a newspaper, so they wrote it so that people should learn from it. So if they wrote it that people should learn from it, there are those that are strict, and there are many who are strict and say that those pages should be clipped out from the newspaper and put in Geniza. You don't have to put the whole paper in Geniza. That's Pashit. You don't have to put the whole paper in Geniza. And to the contrary, it could even be wrong to put the whole paper in Geniza, because it's a disgrace to the real Seamus. In other words, you know, we can speak to the Reb Jeff Kopelman, who is the local tzaddik who processes Seamus in the neighborhood, and people bring boxes and boxes of Seamus, and sometimes you look through it, a lot of those things don't need to be put in Seamus at all. And if somebody takes his whole year's subscription of the Jewish press or the Ted Neman and puts it in the Seamus, so the case could be made. It's wrong. It's wrong. This stuff shouldn't be buried. Why is this being put in Seamus? You're adding on Seamus. It's not proper respect to the real Seamus that's in there. So therefore, there's no question that the most of the paper you could throw out. That's no question. There are those who say, however, that you have to take the Torah pages and put them in some sort of Geniza. I believe Rav Moshe Feinstein said you don't have to go looking through the paper to see if they have it. You could just throw out, unless you know for sure, but you know, you could just throw it out. But if you know it's there, you should really take it out. That's what some people say. However, this is very difficult for most of us. because like, you know, it's just hard, and no who has time to do this, and you know, the paper comes every week, and before you know it, you have a whole accumulation, and now you have all the sections and all kinds of things, and it's all over, and you have so many different publications, and you have all the photocopies and all the handouts and all the parsha sheets that kids come home from school with. So a lot of people find this difficult. So the Tzad Heter, which is relied upon, commonly relied upon, Yeshiva here relies upon it, is based on a combination of sources. We find that in one of the halachas svarim that was written over 100 years ago, the question came up, a very big shaila was asked before, the question came up in a printing press, in a publishing house. So what happens, let's say, in just to take a name, let's say Art Scroll, okay? So they're preparing, let's say, a new sefer that has, you know, some sefer of Tanakh or a Chumash, a new type of Chumash, and they give it to the printer, and there are people that sit there and have to do, they have to arrange that it should come out on properly on the page, it should be centered, all the considerations, the aesthetic considerations, and they make a run of 5,000 copies, and lo and behold, it's off center, or lo and behold, the last line of Rashi got cut off on every page. So forget it, right? We can't use this. We can't put this into the public use. So it's put aside. Now they have thousands and thousands of sheets of paper that have Divrei Torah on them. What in the world are they supposed to do with that? What are they supposed to do? Are we going to tell them that they have to go put all of this in Geniza? This would not be such a simple matter. You could end up with mounds and mounds of it. And the concern further is that sometimes if you're too strict, you could have what's called a chumra da osili de kula, that sometimes you could be machmir, but it doesn't end up as a chumra, it ends up as a leniency. Because if you tell people to do something that's very hard to do, they won't end up doing it, and then it'll end up in a worse situation. So for example, if you tell a person you have to put in Geniza, you tell the publishing house they have to put in Geniza, and they're not going to do it, or they'll say, yeah, okay, we'll do it. But they don't have a person on staff who's the Geniza person, right? They don't have such a position in any publishing house that I'm aware of. So what are they going to do? They're going to leave it lying around. Meanwhile, while it's lying around, someone knocks over the box, and it gets falls on the floor, and everyone's stepping on it, and it's left lying around. And so there's a question, so where's the chumrah? Is the chumrah to tell people to do Geniza, or maybe in that situation not? So in the Sefer Ein Yitzchak, he said that the way to solve this problem, he came up with a very novel chiddush. And his novel chiddush was, tell the printer, tell the person who is actually doing the printing, that when he turns on the machine, or whatever, when he's preparing this item for print, he should have in mind that it should not take on the sanctity of Kisvei HaKodesh. Because there's a concept that's based on a few different sources that if something was not made for the purpose of Kisvei HaKodesh, it wasn't made as a sefer. Like we mentioned before, if in the newspaper they happen to, Derech Agav, they happen along the way to quote some Dvar Torah or some Torah law, whatever it may be, that you can discard according to everybody. Because that doesn't have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh, because it wasn't written to be learned from. It was written stam, it's in the course of a newspaper article that they're reporting on something. That has no sanctity. So the Ein Yitzchak said that they should have in mind that it should not have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh. And they went together, that alone, you'll say, I just could tell from the number of eyebrows that were raised when I said this that not everyone is so thrilled with this idea, but they combined with this a psak from the Shvus Yaakov, the one of the great Achronim, who said that in certain cases of Kisvei HaKodesh, we mentioned before, one would actually be allowed to burn them rather than to have them come to greater desecration. In other words, even though it seems outrageous to us, you can take a sefer and burn it, but the fact is that the feeling was that the worst possible thing is that it should come to total desecration. Total desecration is like it gets left lying around, the people are going to stomp on it. But I can imagine that in a printing press type situation, or even in a school office where they're printing up the sheets that are going to be distributed to the students. So it always happens that you know, some mistake is made, have to do it again, whatever, some extra pages come flying out of the copier, they're on the floor, and the next thing you know, everyone's walking on top of them, and that's a greater desecration. So the Shavuos Yaakov ruled that in those situations, it's better just take it and burn it. So even though that is also not a consensus opinion, but based on the combination of the two, in other words, he says you could burn it, and he says that if you have in mind not to instill kedusha in it, that would make a difference. So therefore, there are those that say that with the newspapers that we have, a person could be lenient and say that I'm going to put it out. I don't know what they do with the garbage. In the old days, they used to burn it. I don't know if that's what's done today, but that's not done today. Okay, but in the old time, certainly that would have been some sort of tzad heter. You would have had a little bit from the Shavuos Yaakov, a little bit. But anyway, I guess today the main heter that they rely on is the fact that it was not made. With the mindset was not that it should have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh. Now, the truth of the matter is, as much as many of us rely on this, and really it's very convenient to rely on it, it's far from clear that this is the case, because when a newspaper runs a halacha column, the reason why they put it there was that people should learn from it. It's not just there to fill the space. They put it there, they have Divrei Torah in the parasha because they want you to read it. They're hoping that maybe on Shabbos, that the Shabbos table, someone will have a Divrei Torah to say over because I saw a nice vart in the newspaper. That's what it's there for. So to say that it does not have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh because it was not made with the intent that it should have sanctity. Well, why wasn't it made with the intent to have sanctity if you put it there that people should learn Torah from it? Why is it different than any other sefer? So some people say, well, but it was made for short-term usage. But that is questionable if there's a basis for that. In other words, that is questionable. In other words, something that's made short term, does that by in other words, that in itself is not a heter. So what they mean to say is that since it was made short term, so therefore it doesn't have the sanctity of Kisvei HaKodesh. But that's, again, it's debatable because, okay, maybe short term, but the fact is they want people to learn from it. So what would be if somebody wrote a sefer on paper that was very thin? So it's not going to be, you're not going to be able, if someone, let's say, wrote Divrei Torah in pencil, it's not going to hold. Right? A year from now, you come back, you won't be able to read it. Would we say that doesn't have the status of Seamus? Hard to know. But nevertheless, this is the heter. This is a heter, and it's brought in a lot of places. Let's go in order. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What did that second pesach of Shavuos Yaakov do for us?
It doesn't do anything for us today. They don't burn the garbage anymore. I think that in time, in other words, or theoretically, if a person wanted to take it and burn it, if a person wanted to burn his own, you know, then that would be
the newspaper or his own svarim.
So the Shavuos Yaakov said it particularly about svarim. About papers and things like that, and publishing materials that were, you know, proofs that came out that were not done properly and so forth. I believe so. Yeah, it wouldn't help us so much. Yeah, go ahead.
I heard you're supposed to put it in my bag.
I'm going to get to that. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, go ahead.
Isn't it disingenuous to tell an art scroll printer before he turns on the press that he's not making this for the purpose of...
Right. So the art scroll printer, the art scroll printer wouldn't help. This wouldn't help for art scroll. The question is, would it help for the newspaper printer? In other words, the newspaper printer no newspaper publisher thinks that his papers are going to be kept in storage for long periods of time, right? No matter how highly they think of their newspaper, I doubt very much that the publishers in the New York Times think that you're going to have whole archives in your house, right? And nobody thinks that. Everybody realizes that it's going to be tossed out. So therefore, in other words, in that type of context, so you'll say, well, since it's only, you know, it's on a short term, like I'm saying, short term type of thing, so have in mind that you're not instilling kedusha in it. You know, but the question is that the opposition says that, but de facto, by the fact that you're publishing it, in other words, what did you put it there for? You put it in the news reports, so you understand that, you know, old news, like we have the expression, that's old news, nobody wants to read yesterday's newspaper, so that stuff gets thrown out. But the halacha column is not old news. Let's hope not, right? The halacha column is not old news, so therefore that type of thing. So it's for long term. Yes, Scott.
Isn't it unusual to have like a negative kavanah?
Yeah, okay, so in other words, the question of the negative kavanah is a lack of a positive kavanah. You know, today everything has to be positive, so it's not negative, it's a lack of a positive. You know, when you call someone an idiot, I'm not being negative, chas v'shalom, I'm just not being positive. You know, you're not a person that has any intelligence. You know, you say that to a person. I'm not chas v'shalom saying you're an idiot. I'm saying, you know, so alright, so it could be the same type of thing. It's hard to know. But this is, but I will tell you that this heter is brought among distinguished poskim. His brother Rav Sternbach, or Moshe Sternbach, shalom be well, one of the leading poskim of our time, who resides now in Yerushalayim, has tshuvas about this in a sefer tshuvas van Hagos, where he says that he combines a lot of things with the newspapers. He combines also the fact that not everybody with the printing presses agrees that it has the status of Kiddush HaNer. If you take all the lenient opinions and put them together, so he says that it's not so terrible to throw them out. Others as well say that. I saw it reported in the contemporary of Shmuel Kamenetsky. Other people say the same type of thing. But there are machmirim. There are many machmirim. So, if a person wants to take the stricter approach, it would mean taking the time every week to pull the halacha pages or the Divrei Torah out of the paper and putting them into Geniza. It's not the simplest thing because it accumulates. Nobody likes having Seamus in their house. It just sits around, and even if the husband has is inspired to do it, but the wife who's more practical and is more in charge of keeping a sense of orderliness in the home, said, what's going on here? What are all these bags? Usually it's put in some plastic bags and it's flying out and falling over the sides and all kinds of things. So it's not such a simple thing. If a person wants to put them in Geniza, they could. If a person wants to be lenient, there is room to be lenient. However, they said there are two catches to this. In order to be lenient, number one, it is recommended by many that it should be discarded in a respectful manner. In other words, so even though we will say that they don't have the full status of Kisvei HaKodesh, but nevertheless, to just take it and flush it down the toilet, that would be a disgrace. So what they say to do is to put it. The preferred thing, which would not work here in Miami, but in New York it would still work, it would be to put it in a bag separate from the garbage, put it out together with the garbage, but not in the garbage pail, and let the garbage man do what he wants with it. In other words, I put it, now that doesn't work here because nobody picks up the garbage. They have the trucks that pick up the garbage. If you leave something in a bag, it's not going to be taken. But there are still cities where they have the manual garbage collection, and therefore if you leave it lying around, if you leave it lying out, so then, alright, listen, I put it out in the bag. He threw it away. It wasn't me. So that type of thing, when you get into such a situation, may be helpful. As I say, that doesn't help for us. So what they say in places like where we live would be to put it in a double covering, preferably or at the very least in a single bag by itself, and then many people are lenient, they'll just put it right into the regular garbage pail, but at least it was not treated with total desecration. It was not just discarded and a person didn't do worse things with it. It was shown some respect and thrown out. Yes?
Would a recycled bin be treated?
A recycled bin is an interesting thing. So a recycled, Moshe Feinstein allowed in the publishing houses for them to recycle the papers that they, in other words, when they had the proofs of Svarim that did not make the, they weren't good enough, for whatever reason they had to be discarded. So he said, so one of the publishers asked that he'll save himself money, that they'll recycle the paper. So he said, if you're going to recycle the paper for the purpose of writing Svarim, in other words, what's Art Scroll going to do with it? They'll use the paper from other Svarim. So that, they said, was okay. In cases where it's just not going to be recycled, is highly questionable whether that's considered good enough. But like I say, the best thing would be if a guy would take it away or something like that. That would be the best thing. That doesn't happen most often. So therefore, to put it in some sort of bag and leave it to somebody should pick it up. To put it in the garbage, even if it, the commonly people take two bags, you take from Publix, you know, the thin bags, you put the Divrei Torah in that, and that's the end of it. Again, this only applies to the parts that are Torah. The parts in the newspaper that are not Torah can be discarded, and that you could throw out no matter what you want to do. Okay, now, there are two schools of thought. It's hard to say for sure. There are machmirim, there are mekilim. Many people are mekil here in the yeshiva because of the large amount of material. I think probably in most schools they're lenient in that way because it accumulates tremendously. An individual could decide what they want to do. There's room to be mekil, there's room to be machmir, either one. Okay, now, other questions where it comes up? Yeah, go ahead.
Let's say tomorrow that was
A parsha sheet has more leniencies because the parsha sheet has the fact that it wasn't made for long term, which it seems there is basis for that type of thing. You know, that you can make the case that it wasn't made with Islamic, really. That's not called Islamic. That's the argument. It's not with Islamic because to read it, to learn from it for 1 week is not called l'islamic. That's what they say. In other words, a sefer that was written for the long haul, so that's l'islamic. But it's just for a few days and you throw out the paper. Okay, that's the argument. So therefore, an old Gemara would be different. The fact of the matter is, it's not so simple. Sometimes people take Sfarim and just, you know, I'm tired of it. It's outdated edition. You know, today the Sfarim business has become a multi-million dollar business, and almost all the old Sfarim have been improved upon. The retypeset, incredible. It's much more expensive now to buy Sfarim than it was previously. It used to be Sfarim were the biggest bargains in the world. But today the Sfarim have become very expensive because they've been redone. So what happens a lot of times is that the old edition is just not used anymore. Like now they came out, with the Mishnah Berurah with Nekudos. Okay, that is very helpful. People have a hard time reading it without the vowels, so now they have Mishnah Berurah with the vowels. So let's say in a certain shul, all the people are interested in that, but meanwhile they have the old Mishnah Berurahs that are going to be obsolete. So some people say, all right, so just take the whole thing and put it in Seamus. But that's not so simple to do that, because why should that sefer be put in Seamus? It still has value, it still has use. So that's a discussion in its own right, whether that should really happen. Maybe you just have to leave it out on the shelves and whatever, put it somewhere, you know, it doesn't have to be in the most prominent location. But to just take Sfarim and, you know, say, hey, I don't need it anymore, but it's still in good condition, so then it shouldn't even be put in Geniza necessarily. It should just be held on to. It's only when it becomes really useless that it comes up. Let me just, because it's late, let me just run through these sheets. Yeah, okay, so now the second catch, and I get to in a second, the second catch, which unfortunately applies to these sheets, is that it is highly questionable whether these heterim apply if you have the written name of God on them. In other words, part of the heter that they use is because the English sheets in the parsha, so it says a nice Dvar Torah about Avram Avinu or Moshe Rabbeinu or Rabbi Akiva, whatever it is, very, very nice. But it doesn't necessarily have the Shem Hashem. But here we have, see, right here, Machshel Rabim, at this very shir, we could create a stumbling block by photocopying straight out of a chumash that has the Shem Havaya on it on the front page. So this is, there are those who say that even the ones who will not put in, who feel that a newspaper thing you wouldn't put in Geniza, you'll never see the name of Hashem in a newspaper. That nobody does that. But here you have it. So this is a good question, what we're going to do about it. I didn't realize this until after the sheets were made last night. I said, oh my gosh, the sheets have the Shem Hashem on them. So, all right, we'll see. Yeah.
I had a real problem in Israel with one of the stamps there.
Yeah. There's all kinds of problems. There are problems no bounds today. They put them on stamps. They have sometimes, we'll see in a minute. So let me just finish up because it's getting late. Okay, so with the Shem Hashem, there's more reason that should be clipped out and put into Geniza if you have that. So if you want to take these sheets home, you're certainly welcome to. But if you want to play it safe, you can leave it here. It'll be the yeshiva's problem to deal with it. Okay, so that's don't quote me on that. I need the job. But the fact of the matter is that this is something that one possibly could do. Now, just to finish, the question comes up, what about taking such a thing into the bathroom? Can a person in the newspaper, you want to take the paper into the restroom, so is a person allowed to do that? So now, obviously the halacha is that svarim cannot be taken into a place of bizayon, and therefore a sefer should not be brought into the bathroom, even if you're not going to read from it. All right. Now, we discussed once several years ago. A common question that comes up today: a person is going on an airline who has a carry-on bag that has tefillin and svarim, and you can't leave it lying around. It'll be confiscated by, you know, there'll be all kinds of things, you know, the today's world with all the fears that they have. So you have to take it. So the halacha is that it could be taken into a bathroom as long as it's double covered. And that's the common practice, that a person who has some sort of roll-on bag, you know, that they take with them, that you could take that into the bathroom with you as long as it's double covered. So that, there's no question. That applies to svarim, applies to tefillin, and so forth.
But the
talis bag is a question if the item is stored in is questionable whether that's considered covered. But if you keep it in a suitcase under something, so that's one covering, and then the suitcase itself is the second covering, and there you have it. That makes life simple. But what about taking a newspaper that has Divrei Torah into the bathroom? So to read Divrei Torah in the bathroom clearly is not correct. The person should not think about Divrei Torah in a makom bizayon, or in a place that's unclean. But as far as taking it into the bathroom, so I did see, I couldn't track down the sefer in which this is supposedly found, but I saw a contemporary person who published an article that said, quoted Rav Elyashiv, that he said that you could do it as long as the pages that have the Divrei Torah have two pages on top of them. In other words, if the Divrei Torah on page 10 and you're reading page 20, so the paper itself is covering those sheets, and therefore that would be okay, except that you really would have to be careful not to ever turn to page 10, which may not be the easiest thing. So many people don't take such things into the bathroom because of the fact that there could be all sorts of problems. You could end up in a bazillion. It could end up that you'll read it, and who knows what. But if a person felt the great need to do so, so they have this psak as long as it's double covered. Similarly, a person can go into the bathroom with money in their pocket. Okay, it says in God We Trust, which is the English of one of the names of Hashem, and therefore that would have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh, right? So obviously, you know, even though we have the expression people took their money and burnt it, right? They burned money, but nobody does that in real terms. No one discards money, but at the same time, the question is, can you take it into the bathroom? So if you have it in your wallet, again, so it's in the wallet, it's in the pants, whatever, so that's double covered. But what about let's say you just have it in your pocket, let's say you're holding it in your hand. So the feeling is that that's not a shiloh at all. That you could do, because they it wasn't written with any sanctity. It's just an expression. It's sort of like it's what's called a melitza. It's not a dvar Torah. It's not any sort of holy reference. It's just like an expression. So even though we would not say, you know, God bless you in a public bathroom to somebody, we would refrain from saying that. But being that here you're not saying it, it's only written down, and it's written down on something that's mass produced, and you're not erasing it, so you can combine all the lenient opinions and say that that's all right. Okay, finally, just to finish up. Now, the big question that comes up is invitations. Invitations to weddings. Commonly, people get all excited. Oh, Yishama Bar Yehuda v'chusas Yerushalayim. Right? So now, this is a pasuk. This is a pasuk. So the question is, are you allowed to put that on an invitation that is going to be discarded? Clearly, nobody's going to start putting the invitations into, maybe some people do, but people are not going to put invitations into Seamus, into Geniza. Nobody really does that type of thing. And thus, the question presents itself, putting psukim. So first of all, what constitutes a pasuk? So the consensus of the poskim is that even three words together that conjure up the image of a pasuk in a person's mind is enough. Even if it's not a whole pasuk, it's still a problem. And therefore, there are many who said, and this is not popular, but there were many poskim who said, including Rav Moshe Feinstein, that one should not put any psukim on any invitations. That he should not write this kol sasam, kol simcha, kol kosam, kol kala, should not put it on the invitation. This is not popularly followed, this psak, right? Virtually every invitation you'll find it. So, how do people get around that? So apparently, it's a nice thing. You want to give your simcha some spiritual meaning, so you want to put that on the invitation. So there are several ways that people deal with this. One way that they deal with it is that they change the wording a little bit. So for example, you find on some wedding invitations, you'll see the expression, Na'les Yerushalayim al Rosh Simchasenu, right? Which is a corruption, or whatever you want to call it, distortion of the pasuk in Lo Ales Yerushalayim Al Rosh Simchasi, right? So they changed it around. They put, obviously, that's the pasuk they're referring to. Anybody there's a well-known pasuk in the Al Naros Bavel Perek of Tehillim that many people say. But the fact is that's not you took the pasuk and you changed it a little bit. You made it into plural. The pasuk in Tehillim is in the Lashon Yochid. It's singular, and here we made it plural. Some people say that's good. Other people say yeah. But when anyone who sees that thinks of the pasuk, everyone knows. Oh, what is that a reference to? That's a reference to this pasuk. Okay, so, but that's one thing that people do. However, it's very common that people want to put the kol sasam, kol simcha, kol chasam, kol kala. So, I would like to say as follows. What people do with this is one thing which may come as a surprise to many people, despite the popularity of all kinds of songs, Od Yishama Bar Yehuda, that if you track down the psukim in the book of Yirmiyah, you will see that there are words left. Those words don't follow. There's no pasuk that reads exactly that way. There is no pasuk that says Od Yishama Bar Yehuda B'chus Yerushalayim. What does it say? So I will read it to you. It's an interesting thing that in Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud, it says, Ko Amar Hashem, Od Yishama Bamokom Hazeh Asher Atem Omrim Charifu, it will yet be heard in this place, referring to Eretz Yisrael, that you say is destroyed, Me'ein Adam, Me'ein Behema, that it's totally uninhabited, totally desolate, Ba'ore Yehuda V'chutzus Yerushalayim, Hanishamos Me'ein Adam, Me'ein Yoshev, that are desolate from any habitation. And then the next Pasuk says, Kol Sosom, Kol Simcha, Kol Chosom, Kol Kala, Kol Omrim Hodos Hashem Tzivakos. So, the words are not really, the way we sing it, it's not really one pasuk. Okay, you skipped. We left out words from the psukim. Okay, so now, that in itself is a chiddush, but the fact is that became, I don't know who's responsible for this, whoever first composed the first niggun of Od Yishama, took out the words and nobody realized it and it became over and alright, fine, there's nothing wrong with that. But the fact is that on that basis, there are those that say that, well, it's not a whole pasuk, it's two psukim that you sort of splice together, you took some words here, some words there. But that's a questionable heter, because, like we said before, even three words together are no good, and kol sasam, kol simcha, kol chasam, kol kala is all together. So what some people do, and this will explain to you, if you ever wonder about the layout of wedding invitations, and you say, it's all aesthetic, it's all the Baalei Simcha have their own artistic way of doing things, this is not so. Very often, you will see that the words, Od Yisham, Bar Yehuda, Chus Yerushalayim, are written like in a rainbow shape. It's written in an arc. And there are people, and this is not just because it looks nice. This is because there are people who say that a pasuk that's not written in a straight line does not have sanctity. And therefore, if you write it in a way that it's not in a straight line, or it's separated, so you also have commonly on the invitations, kol sason, so what they do very often, in other words, the people who really are on top of this, so they'll put kol sason on the right, kol simcha on the left, kol chason on the right, kol kala on the left, so there are no three consecutive words that are together. In other words, all the words are separated. See, if you put on one side kol sasam, kol simcha, and on the other side kol chasam, kol kala, the kol kala, you'd have the issue that you have three consecutive words of a pasuk. But this way, what they do is they keep it separated. They keep it separated. So therefore you have here kol sasam, over there is kol simcha, over here is kol chasam, over there is kol kala, and that supposedly makes everybody happy. It's questionable whether this is correct. There are many who say that they should not put psukim at all, but it's not at all the minhag. Everybody does this, so therefore we have to say that the minhag is to be lenient in this. But at the very least, the person should try. There are those who say that making in the rainbow doesn't help. It's narishkeit to do such a thing. That's what some people say. But other people say it's a good thing to do, keeping the words. So what some do is they do. I did this at my daughter's wedding, which I didn't fully realize what I was doing, but I just suspected that was the reason that we put Na'alas Yerushalayim Aroshim Chaseinu on the first line. So we relied on the fact that that's a distortion of a pasuk. So that's all right. And then kol sasim kol simcha kol kala, and that way you don't have any pasuk on the straight line or in any line that's three consecutive words. That's what a lot of people do today. If you look, next time you get a wedding invitation in the mail, check it out. You know, but everyone reads only the English. They sometimes wonder, what do they even put the Hebrew side on there for? So the answer is, you can learn from the Hebrew side. Read it and see, what shittas does this person follow? Let me see how they did that invitation. Let me see, what are they having a rainbow? Oh, they're relying on that hatter. They have the pasuk Od Yishan Bar Yehuda V'chus Yerushalayim in a straight line? Not so simple, right? Do I have to take it and put it in Geniza? Highly... Okay, listen, it's questionable. Again, all the heterim come back, it's short term, it's this, it's there. You can certainly say it's not l'islamate, it's just put that this is what's brought the Ksav Sofer, even brings somebody, not the Ksav Sofer, so people say that the whole use of the pasuk in that situation is not written to learn anything, it's just a nice expression that fits the occasion, and therefore it has no status of kedusha at all. So there's all kinds of heterim. In other words, if you want to write it straight, you could rely on that it's not put for learning, it's just put stam. If you want to be more machmir, you could put a rainbow, or you could put now is Yerushalayim. If you want to separate kol sasim kol simcha, you could do that. Whatever you do, the main thing should be simchas. But the fact is that there are halachic nuances in all of these things, and if it ever would come down to it, sometimes it would be worthwhile asking the person's rav, you know, how do I handle this situation in today's world? There is the opportunity to have to generate far more shamus than ever before in the history of the Klal Yisrael, and therefore a little bit of care we have to take, and hopefully we can keep this halacha properly. Yes, CDs. Yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot to say CDs. Digital things, they say you could throw away. Computer screens, you could, a Rebbe who writes on a blackboard can erase the pasuk, but all of these things apply if it's not this, if you're not writing a teacher on a blackboard should not write the Shem Hashem at all costs, should not write it, because that is a question, even though it was written to be erased. But there is a question, erasing a Torah tape, can you erase it? Or sometimes a kid gets a chazonis, you know, he's davening by his bar mitzvah and musaf, so they have a tape of a chazon, and he actually says Baruch Atah Hashem the real way. Whether you could erase such a tape is a question, but okay, better, you know, many people are lenient in all this.